Mr. Baker, Reel 6. Could you describe what happened following Stand 2 when you were sent out on lookout duty, Mr. Baker?
No. One of the worst things that we had was between Stand 2 at night and Stand Down in the morning, men had to go and lie between the two trenches. They were unarmed, and their business was to report any movements from the Turks. All you had was a knife and a piece of string, which you pulled if there was any sign of movement. The Turks used to come out sometimes and rob the boots off the dead men and empty their packs. And you laid out there for 1 hour. One night I was out there and I'd got shorts because I'd cut off my trousers and made them into shorts. And suddenly I felt something on the back of my right thigh. At that moment, a very light went up and lit up the whole of the area, and I stealthily looked round, and there was a big mouse sitting on the back of my thigh, which I was very happy to see instead of the Turk being there. And ever since then, I've always been afraid of a mouse.
Was it very frightening out on your own?
Yes. You see, you were out there on your own, and there would be another one about 80 yards away, another man further along the line, so that it was well and truly covered, you see, at about 80 yards distance. And I suppose, you know, that went along right along the line.
How many times did you have to do this duty while you were there?
I did it about three times altogether. Three times, I think. And you see, you had it in turn. They didn't pick on just one man to do it. That spread all over. And they all said the same, because just as you stepped out of the trench into no man's land, there was a skull that had been somebody, he was dead, of course, you know, through being shot through the head, and his skull was splintered. And that was your send-off as you went out the trench, this skull, as you stepped out. It wasn't a good send-off, I can assure you, no. And
you never saw any Turks while you were out?
No, I never saw one Turk, not while I was there, not in that lot. And
did you have any barbed wire, or were you just...
Oh, yes, we had barbed wire right up to the trench. We had two lines of barbed wire. We had a line of barbed wire immediately outside the trench, about 6 feet outside. And then we had another line of barbed wire about 20 yards out, and you had to get where the gap was to get through that wire into no man's land, which wasn't easy.
So you were the other side of the barbed wire?
Yeah, on the other side of the second line of barbed wire, yes.
How thick was the barbed wire? Was it sort of...
Oh, it was coiled. Coiled, and it was on various pieces of metal and things like that, you know, and some cases wood, and but our barbed wire was poor compared with theirs. They'd got huge spikes on theirs, over an inch long. I'd never seen barbed wire like it. Cool. And they used to sing, "Hanging on the old barbed wire, we've seen him." Yeah, but that was the song, you know. But I can assure you it was anything but funny to see them hanging on the barbed wire, because there were quite a lot of our men who'd got mixed up with the barbed wire, you know, before they got very far. Because, you see, when there was an attack, they used to strip most of the barbed wire down, so it was obvious that there was going to be an attack. Oh, yes.
I'd like to look at some of the points, aspects of the fighting. I realise it was a quiet period, but the sort of drip-drip nature of the fighting. Was there much artillery fighting going on? Did you get shelled a lot?
Not too much artillery, because neither they nor we had got much ammunition, and otherwise they would have blown us off the peninsula. We used to be shelled on an average, I suppose, about every 2 days, and not very intensive some days. Some days they'd give you about a 6-hour bombardment, but rarely did one drop in the trench. They nearly always either pitched short or went too far over.
How close would they be?
They are the closest that you'd get. You'd get one now and again drop in the trench. And, of course, that caused lots of trouble. And if they hit an area where there were several men, that was the end of them. But it didn't happen very often. No. And
what was it like being under artillery fire? What was your own reaction to it?
You crouched as low down in the trench as you could, right flat down in the trench, and as near to the parapet as you could, because you hoped, you know, that any explosion would be behind. The ground used to rock when they pitched, and the chunks of HE used to fly about just like cats mowing, you know. And so long as you'd only heard the explosion, you were all right. If you didn't hear the explosion, you were not there anymore. Oh, no.
They didn't use shrapnel, then?
No, I was never under shrapnel. Not in the trenches. Never. No, we had a bit of shrapnel out of the line. We had some shrapnel when we were supposed to be in rest, which was right behind the lines. Yes, and but that wasn't too bad, really.
Did most of the men manage to go through high explosive shell fire all right? Did they get through it all right?
Oh, yes. I've never seen anybody with what they called a wind up, really, you know. They didn't show it anyway. No, but
what about British artillery?
Hmm?
What about the British artillery? Was that...
That was on a par with theirs. They were short of ammunition. And had they had some ammunition, they might have made some progress. But, you see, when they did fire onto the Turkish trenches, a lot of it went beyond the trench, and quite a bit fell this side, you know, and amongst the dead men. And but there was, as I say, there wasn't much of it because they hadn't got the ammunition. No. One day they brought up some monitors on out in the Aegean, and they'd got 18-inch guns, and of course they could lob them in, but they only fired a few rounds. Lord knows why they fired them at all, and they just went off like thunderstorms when they hit the ground. That shook everything, but I don't think they did much damage with them, because I don't think they hit much.
Was there any bombing, hand bombing, hand grenade throwing?
No, not. We never had one hand grenade thrown into our trench because it was too far away. Yes.
How about mortars? Did either side use mortars?
No, we hadn't got mortars, neither had they. No, it was just a matter of machine guns, rifles and artillery.
Was sniping very intensive?
Not too much, because you see, in the main, there was nothing to shoot at. Well, I was supposed to be a good shot, which I suppose I was, and anything that they thought needed attention, I used to have a look at. And one morning there was a man who they said was picking off our men, and would I have a go at him? And that was just stand to. and he was supposed to be on the top of the trench. You could just see his head above the top of the trench, and I lined him up and fired. And just at that moment, one whistled past my ear like that. I reckon we both fired together, and we never had any more bother from him. But I reckon he missed me by about that much.
So you didn't?
I felt it whistle past me like that. Oh, that was close. I said to Sergeant Hook, I said, that was too close. I said, I'm bobbing down. And I did.
So you'd actually displayed yourself above the trench. You hadn't used a periscope rifle.
No. In those days, you see, we had in our trench, we had a steel plate, you know, that you could fire through a hole. And that was quite handy, really. And if you saw any movement in the daytime, and you didn't see very much, one day, I remember clearly, there was a head kept bobbing along like that, walking along the trench. And I think that man, he must have been about 7 feet high. You know, as he walked along, his head came up about that much. And I had a couple of shots at him through this steel plate, and He didn't appear anymore after that. So, well, I expect I got him, but I don't know, of course. But I never saw his head anymore. But he bobbed up just that much, you know, above the trench.
2 or 3 inches up.
Yeah, about 6 inches, I should think. He must have been a very tall man, but he didn't know he was on show. But he was, and he was on show to the wrong man. Yes.
Did we suffer many casualties from sniping?
No, not many. Not many at all, because, you see, it was just staid trench warfare. Then they'd lost all these men on the day that Suvla happened, you see. This was supposed to be a counter-attack that would confuse the Turks, you see, and keep them occupied while the Suvla landing was on. That's when all those men were killed. And on the right, the French troops near the Dardanelles, that section there, that they didn't go out of their trench. They wouldn't go out of their trench. So they didn't lose very many men. But the Anson and the Hanson Worcesters, they were as good as wiped out. I think they said only 42 survived of the Anson, and only one second lieutenant. The whole battalion, they were completely wiped out, except for those few. Mm. And that's where all that stench came from. And that, I imagine, was the last attempt to do an attack from the Helles end. Because, as you know, they evacuated early in January, didn't they? The next year. And There was not much fighting going on when I left in October. No.
When you were in the front line, where did you have any sort of dugout?
No.
Or did you just sleep?
No, we just laid in the trench. Yes.
What equipment did you have with you?
Equipment?
You were in the front line.
All we had was just a pick and a shovel, in which the was carried up there, you know, and that was the loose equipment, but your own equipment was an entrenching tool and your rifle and your ammunition, and that was all. I had plenty of ammunition, and I always used to carry 50 extra rounds because you didn't know what you might get cornered at any time. And I had a bandolier which held a lot of extra ammunition, but the pouches we always kept filled up. And as I say, we used to fire a few rounds off at night to keep awake, because you were not allowed to sleep. Oh, no. But in the main, conditions were not too bad, I suppose, really. You were lousy. That was one of the worst things.
Before we get onto that, I want to just Could you take me through a sort of typical day in the front line, from when you got up to stand two in the morning, right through to the evening?
To the evening, like on a day when they shelled you. Is that it?
Yes, and just what you do during the day.
Yes.
At each time, and when you got fed, and what, and that sort of thing. And
yes. Well, in the morning, after stand two, you see that they reduced the number of people who were on the fire step. You see, to start with, and they used to use their periscopes to watch what was going on. But the others just sat a bit on the fire step and roasted. And as you can guess, in between those trenches, that used to get ever so hot. And the food wasn't all that good. And
did you have a breakfast? Would you get given a breakfast in the morning?
No. In the morning, you had you had bread and margarine and jam or marmalade in tins. And that was your breakfast. You didn't have any bacon or anything like that. No, you were very poorly fed, really. And at midday, it was chiefly stewy mixtures. And again at night, you had jam and bread, and that was it.
How was the food brought up to the line for these meals?
There used to be special squads, you know, that used to bring the food up. And the old sergeant used to receive it and issue it. And they used to give us rum, and all those who liked rum, they could have that at midday, a tot of rum. But
did you take it?
No, I didn't take it. No, and I didn't smoke either. And Sergeant Hook, who was the regular Royal Marine, Miller, the officer, used to issue the tot of rum. Each man was supposed to drink it in front of him, but they never did. They walked away, and Sergeant Hook, who stood round the corner, he tipped up the tot of rum like a machine. And every man who didn't take his tot of rum, Hooky, he drank the rum, and I never saw him bat an eyeball. Some days he must have had a half gallon down him. And he never even wobbled. But I think if it came to a fight, he would have fought the whole Turkish army after he'd had that lot, because it was regular, you know. It wasn't just one day. He stood there just like a machine, waiting round the corner for the man to tot. He's had all my rum. And lots of the others too, because lots of the boys didn't drink it, because it was too strong.
What would you do in the afternoons? What would you do in the afternoon?
Always just sat around and waited. You see, we didn't play any games or anything like that, and it was just time.
Was it boring?
Boring, it was boring, because it varied a bit. Now and again, an odd little tiny biplane flew over at great height, you know, and if it was one of theirs, we used to have a few shots at them, but I never saw one of them hit. No. Yeah, used to. We were more or less our own masters when we were in the line. The officer didn't seem to worry very much because there's nothing that they could do.
Could you move about a bit and explore, or were you very strictly...
You were more or less static in your area, yes. And the latrines were about 20 yards behind the front line, and, you know, they were dug in,
What would happen after the evening meal? Would you then stand to again?
You had your stand to, and that was it. And then after a time, they'd say, stand down, you see, and they'd leave so many men on what you call guard for the night, you see. And
how did the guards keep guard? Did they actually look over the top?
They did. They use periscopes? Oh, yes. When it was dark, you had to look over the top then. Yes, but you didn't make a habit of it, because sometimes they used to fire a few odd rounds, you see, with a machine gun, and you didn't know when you were going to get that. Of course, they'd got the range already set up in daylight because they just skidded along the top of the trench, knocked up the sand. But I suppose, looking at it, you know, your chances of getting killed were not too good, really, no.
But did you have a lot of trouble staying awake yourself? You mentioned that you fired guns.
No, not really. No, it was occasionally after a very hot day, you know, and then you had to get up on the old fire step. You see, for your hour, you had an hour on, and then you had an hour off. Well, during that hour, you laid on the deck, you know, on the concrete, or not concrete, on the dirt, and some of it was cut through rock, and it was most uncomfortable. And you might have get half an hour sleep, and then they'd boot you and say, up again, and up again. So your actual sleep was not very much in a night. And you get very tired, you know, towards morning. And when that was your hour on, say, in the small hours, you were glad to fire one or two off and hold the rifle loose, and he kicked you, you see. And those Enfields could kick if you held them loose. Yes.
So you caught up on your sleep in the morning and afternoon then, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes. Oh, yes, you could have a sleep when you were not on, when it wasn't your turn on, you could have a sleep if you could get a sleep in the daytime. Oh, yes, I've had lots of naps.
What was the relationship like with your officers?
Oh, very, very good, yes. My platoon officer, he was a regular Royal Marine, and he'd risen from the ranks. We used to call him Dusty Miller. His name was Miller, and he was ever so friendly. And, you know, we all got on ever so well with him. And any question, you know, that you put to him, he'd answer right down to the grassroots. He treated you as man to man, not as a superior officer. He treated you as a human being. And I must say that all our officers, except the man who brought the draft out, were the same.
Did you see any more of him?
No, he got wounded the first day on putting the line, fortunately for him.
Was there any rumour that he might have been shot by his own side in view of what you said? Or
well,
was it...
I should doubt if he was, because I don't think they were up there with him at the time. But he wouldn't have lasted very long had he... Well, I know he wouldn't, because the boys would only have liked to have had a shot at him, yes.
But that sort of thing, you've said that was the only officer that you've had any bad feeling for.
Oh, yes.
But did you hear of any other instances where officers were that so unpopular that they were threatened like that?
Not one, no. They were all ever so friendly. And, you see, I joined that Royal Marine Battalion, and nearly all of the troops were regulars, except these few that joined up for the war, plus the 200... Knots and Derbys who were transferred, so you could say 700 of them were regulars and reservists, and the officers were all regular Royal Marines.
Well, my
officer, Charlie Grimling, you know, he was 19, he was Haileybury, and he was ever such a nice fella. And Thornley, another one, he was 20. And he was ever so nice too. And, you know, you could talk to them. And they were officers and regulars at that. And they were, well, we chatted away in a normal manner when we were on the ship. Thornley, I used to hold his tunic for him while he did a bit of boxing and all that kind of thing. And Grinning, he was the same. They were so nice. And they both got killed straight away when we were up at Anzac. Grinning, he was on the Dongola and came alongside when I just got on the Dongola, and I looked over the side, and there was Grinling and Thornley. But they only lasted a few hours. They died straight away.
The officers, the officers you had with you at Helles, though, were just as good, were they?
Hmm?
The officers you had with you at on Helles were just as good, though, were they, as the original ones?
Oh, yes, they were good, yes. All of them were good.
How about your NCOs? You've mentioned Sergeant Hook. Did you get on well with your corporals?
Oh, yes, yeah, they were all human. Very friendly. And, what was his name? Locke. There was an old boy named Locke. He was a reservist, Lance Corporal Locke. And, you know, he was a dear old boy. You know, all the troops loved him. And he got killed. But he was really nice.
So there was no bullying from the sergeants?
No, none at all. No. Oh, no. And you know, Royal Marine discipline is strong. But there's a great affinity between the men and the officers. Well, there was then. Yes. And conditions, you know, when you're in the trenches, well, they more or less allow you to do as you like. Yes. Not difficult at all.
Did they keep a close eye on what was going on, the officers and sergeants, to make sure that everybody was all right and that people were maintaining their posts? And
Oh, yes. Yeah, they made sure of that. But, you see, the men themselves did it too. They were no real problem. The only thing was that could you keep going? Because over there it was dysentery that was the trouble. That was a bigger menace than the Turks.
Did you have good contacts with the UK, with home?
In those days, it used to take roughly a fortnight for a letter to come through from home. There was no other means of contacting from home. And you had to wait for letters and parcels to arrive. And we had a fair stream of parcels from home.
But how often would a letter or parcel arrive?
Well, about every week. Some days you had mail, and then next day you have parcels, and some days you'd have two parcels. And, of course, that supplemented.